This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It is time to go blitzing all around the Beltway. 12-18, five biggest takeaways from Sunday that was in the NFL before the end of the hour. The Redskins are linked to one of the more respected coaches in college football. There's been rumors he could be making the leap to the NFL for years. Give you the details on whether or not he's interested and who the Redskins seem to be intrigued by collegiately. But let's kick off the blitz. Craig Hoffman brought to you by Dell EMC and TVAR Solutions, transforming the federal data center, joins us on the Beltway Blitz. Craig, let's start with Dwayne Haskins' performance. Take for a second him staying in the game, the injury out of the equation for a moment. What did we make of the rookie yesterday?
He was uneven. Obviously the toughness of being able to finish the game has to be stated, but taking that out of it, I think the injury affected his performance a little bit. He couldn't quite drive the ball like he usually can. I think obviously in 2 minutes, he was great. He's decisive. He's clearly got prevent defense figured out, and he's figured out how to throw the ball and where it needs to go then. I thought overall he made pretty good decisions. He just has got to continue to clean up the mechanics and accuracy, and when you're banged up, that stuff suffers even more than his usual irregularity as he's still trying to make his way in this league.
So I'm going to say I can't believe, but I absolutely believe it because I'm a lifelong Redskins fan. So I believe this happened. I guess I'm stunned. Again, I shouldn't say that because I'm a Redskins fan. Point, Craig, is I can't believe they kept him in the game, and then I can't believe there wasn't any consideration, apparently, to take him out of the game when he was hurt. They are so lucky something terrible didn't happen. They are so fortunate that a catastrophic injury didn't occur. I cannot believe this is the team that I love and root for and care about.
I mean, I can't either, Danny. Why do you do this to yourself?
I don't know.
But that's probably not the part of the statement you wanted me to react to. I can't believe it either. I think there's such a lack of organizational vision to leave your franchise quarterback in that spot, especially when it happens right before halftime, where your de facto GM and team president, or God forbid, even your owner, could go down to the locker room and say, nope, no Moss, he's done. And I understand Dwayne would have thrown a fit, but that's fine. I want him to throw a fit. I want him to want to play. It doesn't mean you have to listen to him. He's 22 years old. In the press conference, he referenced a game in which he also sprained his ankle in high school because that is his point of reference. And that's not a shot at Dwayne. It is just a proof point of how young he is. I want him to want to compete. I admire his toughness and his competitive nature and the way that he was continually battling and trying to figure it out. But he should not have been put in a position to do so in a 3-9, now 3-10 season. And I don't frankly believe Callahan when he says and defiantly says there was no consideration. There had to at least be some kind of quick discussion, but I think the discussion pretty much ended when the doctor said that he was fine, in terms of there was no severe damage, even if there was a risk of some kind of severe damage because he couldn't move and get out of the way.
Craig, it's clear they're moving on from Josh Norman, but even still, I think this is being under-talked about. One of the highest paid players in the league at his position is not getting to play at all. Yesterday, there was an injury at cornerback, and they still didn't let him get on the field for a single snap, as Simeon Thomas, who people wouldn't recognize in a lineup, played 39 snaps. They've gotten better without him on the field, and he now isn't even playing special teams. For some reason, he remains active. I know they're like trying to get him some bonus or something. That makes no sense to me. I feel like they could use that roster spot. I mean, is this not one of the crazier stories revolving around this team? It just seems like it's not getting talked about a lot.
Well, around this team, I don't know, but that has more to do with this team. I think in general, it's interesting. I don't know that it's that inexplicable. Josh does have roster money tied to being active, and I think part of him being a good soldier through all of this is like, hey, we're not going to mess with your money, because I think he would probably have some things to say about how things have gone here if he was not getting that money and they were taking significant chunks out of his paycheck. And so I think from that aspect, it's as simple as follow the money. But in terms of, yeah, they want to take a look at these younger guys. They've got so many of them that they have a backup young guy in Simeon Thomas. And I actually don't think it's that much more complicated than that. That doesn't make it not a story. It doesn't make it not significant that a massive free agent signing from a couple of years ago is now essentially petering out the end of his time in Washington. And by the way, it's like, while he's almost certainly gone next year, it's not like it's for nothing. His contract's not up. They're going to have to cut him and eat some money, even though it's not a significant
cap. But also, there's just not, there's a lot of teams that are bad that would like to look at players. You don't see guys with $14.5 million cap hits getting sat to do that. It just doesn't really happen.
Well, I think the other part of this is, like, Josh is, I don't want to say, like, Josh is encouraging this, but Josh is, I think, okay with it, because some of the plays, as we've talked about on this show and many others, like, some of the plays where he gets blamed are just not on him. And now there are some that are, but I think Josh felt very left out to dry often in that secondary with some of the young guys. He just hasn't played well with them. The chemistry's not right. So for his sake, and also he's been banged up, I think he's better health-wise now with a couple of weeks of not playing football on Sundays. But overall, like, if he can't perform at the level that he thinks he's capable and they want to look at the young guys, it kind of works out for everybody. So if he's having the discussion with them and they're like, yeah, we think we want to look at the young guys, and he's like, yeah, okay, that's cool. Like, there's no pushback there. So I think that's part of this equation too, that Josh is kind of okay with it because he doesn't want to put any bad film out there. He doesn't feel like he can play like himself, whether that's due to injury or the people around him. And whether he's right or not is on some level secondary, because, the results are what they are.
Greg, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
You got it. See you guys.
See you, dude. Let's talk some puck, please. J.J. Reagan joins us. Julio Jones, Reagan. It looks like Nicholas Backstrom returning. Who's the odd man out? What do we expect?
The odd man out is going to be Travis Boyd. I think that's going to be the way it's going to go for a while for him. Unfortunately, he just earned the job, which ended up trading away Chandler Stephenson to make sure they could fit him on the roster. But the situation is, when everybody's healthy, he's probably going to be the odd man out. The fourth line is playing too well, and he's more suited towards the scoring role on the third line anyway. So unless there's a top nine injury, I think Boyd's going to be out for a while here.
Capitals come home for what should be a hero's welcome tonight after their first perfect West Coast trip. They went 4-for-4 on the road. He got all 8 points. It was brilliant. I mean, they dominated, and now they've got Columbus, who's not any good tonight, tuning up for the Bruins, maybe their biggest, best game of the year on Wednesday night. A little two-game homestand. Should be fun, huh, JJ?
Yeah, this will be fun. Columbus is definitely not a very good team, but there's a little bit of intensity there. Ever since that playoff series where the Caps rallied back from that 2-0 deficit to, a little thing go on and win the Stanley Cup, no big deal there. There's been an added intensity to whenever these two teams meet, and you saw that when they did the fake koozie celebration after beating them in overtime the next season. So they're not a good team, but I think this is going to be tougher than people expect. I think John Tortorella is going to have that team up and ready to go for this one. And then, the clash of the Titans on Wednesday. That's going to be such a great game between two of the best teams in the NHL, the Caps and Boston. And the Caps have had their number for years and years and years. So Boston is definitely aware of that, and they're probably definitely looking down the road and saying, we got to figure out a way to beat this team if we're going to want to repeat as conference champions. So definitely a really interesting two-game slate here.
Renowned college offensive mind June Jones-Reagan. Thank you very much, buddy. Appreciate it.
Anytime, guys.
See you, buddy.
That is your Beltway Blitz. I remember June Jones.
Just coordinating 70 touchdowns for Tommy Chang in Hawaii.
Also coached the Falcons, correct?
Didn't he?
I think he did.
Didn't he? I feel like he did with his mustache.
Five biggest takeaways from Week 14 AFC NFC coming up as we continue on Grant and Danny. Next, some Nats news just broke that I think if you're a Nationals fan, you will want to hear. We'll start the segment with that. Remember, the winter meetings are underway, Major League Baseball. Hopefully, we'll get some big stories developing on the Nats front in the next few days. But there's something on the Nats side of things you're going to want to hear next on G&D. ESPN just announced its Sunday Night Baseball schedule for the first half of 2020. The World Series champion Washington Nationals have zero appearances on Sunday Night Baseball. I believe they come back later and put together the second half of their schedule based on how things are going.
Right.
But for the first half of Major League Baseball season, and it actually goes beyond that, it goes into August, the Nationals are not scheduled for Sunday Night Baseball. Of course, they're not the Yankees or the Red Sox, so that makes sense.
You have to televise all 19 of those games.
You have to. How could you not?
You'd put them all on Sunday night if you could.
And I joke, but I get why they do it, but it is still frustrating. In fact, I believe I saw someone tweet that looked at the schedule. Cubs, Dodgers, Red Sox, or a team from New York. That could be the Mets playing the Braves, something like that. Every single game. But one, I think.
Unbelievable.
Cubs, Dodgers, team from New York, or the Red Sox. So there's just not a lot of diversification or versatility with who you're choosing. Doesn't help the game necessarily, but it probably helps you get TV numbers if that's the only goal.
And that is what the goal is, by the way. They're national games, same way with the NBA right now at this moment, by the way. They're scuffling. They need to figure out a way to make it entertaining, so they're just going to dip the ladle into the same thing that they know. Instead of trying to grow the game, they're going to say, forget about growing it in markets like San Diego, Kansas City, Texas, Minnesota, whatever. We're just going with some big cities to get what we can get.
In 25 minutes, what college big-name coach have the Redskins been linked to as of this weekend? And at 1 o'clock, Chris Russell joins us as we finalize our plan to shave his head. Finally, the Redskins have eliminated him from potentially winning the bet. So this week, in the next couple days, right here on this show, you'll have a chance to cut Chris Russell's hair with us.
Biggest development is the Redskins clinched. They clinched the haircut.
They did it. We're Grant and Danny welcoming you back. Let's kick off our biggest takeaways from Sunday in the AFC in Week 14. Huge game between the New England Patriots and the Kansas City Chiefs. This was a rematch, of course, of the AFC title game last week. Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs are rounding into form. I think that is our first takeaway.
Here we go. This is the game. Up the middle, the pass to the end zone, knocked down by Breland. Incomplete. Denying Edelman, denying the Patriots.
Jim Nantz on CBS on the call. What a game it was. Bashaud Breland was outstanding.
Where do I know that name from?
Made a big play against Edelman in the end zone to win it with great tight coverage. Kansas City, 40-9 win over the Raiders, beat the Chargers. They have now won three straight to get to 9-4. Don't look now, but Pat Mahomes is starting to look a little bit more like his old self from a year ago.
Credit to you, because you got an early jump on this train that people had kicked dirt on them a little bit too early, right? As Mahomes was coming back from injury, they weren't the same. And now all of a sudden, they look like the Kansas City Chiefs again. Their record won't be as good. They'll probably end up at, you know, maybe 11-5 somewhere in there. Not that that's not impressive. It's really, really good. But they look the part. They'll get after you in terms of throwing the football a little bit. They can pressure the quarterback at times. They don't care about you running on them because they're going to throw on you and get up and get a lead. They're built like those Colts teams under Peyton Manning for so many years. But the Chiefs are back.
Second of our takeaway, same game. Patriots just don't look like themselves. Generally, this is when they are trending up in December. This is when they start to put all their ducks in a row, and the fact that early season people buried them doesn't matter anymore. But they're still not moving the ball without smoke and mirrors on offense. It's still taking flea flickers and wide receiver passes where they're not quite figuring it out. Tom Brady's numbers yesterday didn't look awful. But one of the big plays he made, if you take it away, was that flea flicker
right
on a gimmick call. It was
really
a great
well-designed
call by
play.
McDaniels.
Yeah.
But you take that away, it was another dud largely for Tom Brady. They're great defensively, so they're going to be a tough out between their defense, their championship pedigree, and you got to out-coach Bill Belichick. But number two takeaway here for G&D this weekend, the Patriots, man, it just doesn't look right still.
This is usually when some unheralded wide receiver has figured it out. The overall numbers won't be good for like a Malcolm Mitchell or a name that Jag that's kind of come through that system. And they get up to speed. Tom Brady works with them. The offense works with them. And they emerge into reliable playoff targets. That hasn't happened yet. We know Edelman. They really, 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 really miss Rob Gronkowski. That was the guy that stirred the drink. Not necessarily making the catches, but that a defense had to account for. There's nobody that scares you right now on that offense.
The Browns barely beat the Bengals yesterday. Here's your next takeaway as Cleveland wins by 8, 27-19. Odell Beckham Jr. is unhappy again. He's pouting again.
No.
Remember, he won it out of New York, wasn't happy there, went to Cleveland. He's now the happiest man on the planet. He's with the Browns. He has fewer targets than his buddy Jarvis Landry, 10 fewer catches, 100-plus fewer yards, averaging just 14 yards per reception and two touchdowns. He's having his worst season in the NFL. Odell Beckham Jr. this week. The drama started. May not want to be in Cleveland. Might want to find his way out this offseason. He got paid. He hated the Giants. He came to Cleveland. He now doesn't like the Browns. Baker Mayfield was talking about it all postgame.
The drama is just drama. It continues to be that on the outside. Within our walls, we know exactly what we have, and we have a good relationship where it's very straight to the point. So I'm not worried about that.
Baker would go on to blame the training staff for some of Beckham's frustration for mishandling a situation early in the year.
Didn't he say that he should have had surgery? Can you remember a quarterback doing that?
No, he completely threw their training staff under the bus. But obviously he's talked to Odell Beckham about it and might be speaking on Beckham's behalf.
Man.
If he's not speaking for Beckham, if he's not saying, basically parlaying what Beckham told him, then that's really dangerous.
There's just to me, this outside looking in, because I don't follow it or cover it or anything like that, just Baker Mayfield's act is a little bit tough for me to swallow. I'm just not a huge fan of that guy. I was really impressed with his play last year.
And, Had a great rookie season.
Yeah, that attitude and the swagger, whatever you want to call it. But there's a lot more of that than there is production at this point. It's wearing a little thin. That's what I would say.
Yes, you're right. He's in a lot of commercials. I think people get mad about that. His attitude is your prototypical. It's great when it's going well, and people are going to hate him when it's going poorly because he's the loudest guy in every room he's in. And that's what you're seeing right now. Last year, he was a leader of men. Can't get enough Baker Mayfield. This is exactly what the Browns need. He's taking them to the Super Bowl. This year, they're not playing well. He's playing terribly. And his act is that of someone who can't lead, who can't run your organization. He is your prototypical version of you see what you want to with him, I think. Let's go to the next big takeaway in the AFC as we get now to number 4 of 5, and that is the Pittsburgh Steelers. They don't have any of their best players.
How are they doing this?
It does not matter. They keep winning. Give Mike Tomlin the Coach of the Year award. This is the best job he has done on the sideline. Look, maybe their schedule's soft, fine. 23-17, they beat the Cardinals yesterday. 20-13, they beat the Browns. 16-10, they beat the Bengals. Before that, it was the Browns again. They do have a win over the Rams and the Colts, two okay teams. The Dolphins, the Chargers, they have not played a good team probably since they played the Ravens on October 6th, the moment they played them that were actually playing well. They took the Ravens to overtime, though.
Their early season loss to San Francisco doesn't look near as bad as it did then.
Close loss.
Yeah.
They now are starting Devlin Hodges. They went from Roethlisberger to Rudolph to Hodges, and he's got a couple wins with Pittsburgh now since he took over.
Low snap. Hodges fields it, fires end zone, and it is caught. Touchdown! It's Johnson! So he's got a punt return touchdown, and now his fourth receiving touchdown of the year. All off the pick from Joe Hayden.
CBS telecast yesterday, 16 completions, 152 yards, and a touchdown. It's basically like Haskins-esque numbers, all those ultra-efficient, 16 of 19. But they don't really ask a ton of him. They run a couple trick plays here and there in the passing game. They hand the ball to whoever they've got. So they don't have James Conner. Yesterday it was Benny Snell, whoever that is. They don't have, it was supposed to be Jalen Samuels. He got hurt in the game at wide receiver. No Juju Smith-Schuster. So it's Deontay Johnson and James Washington and Deion Kane. It's crazy
what
they're doing. That culture
is so good. I just crave it. I just want to be that. I want to be them.
Speaking of good cultures, the Ravens won ugly. They're going to be the one seed, Danny. After the game, John Harbaugh is pumped for his team. This was a huge win. Again, they're tested against a good opponent, and again, they are the last team standing.
Proud of the victory. Very impressed with the Bills. That's a football team that's going to be around through the playoffs, into the playoffs. That's a good football team. Very well coached by Sean McDermott, and very tough, hard-nosed, hard-playing football team. So to win that game, obviously, is a very special victory. Proud of our guys.
Defensively, they're so good. Talking about the Bills. The Ravens' defense. This is the story, okay? As the Ravens' offense has gotten all the attention, most touchdowns per drive, highly efficient, Lamar Jackson leads the league in touchdown passes, has over 1,000 yards as a rusher, is going to win the MVP in all likelihood. The emergence of the Ravens' defense to be able to shove it on some of these opponents when they're winning and losing these huge shootouts early in the season, that's been the story of the second half as they've climbed to the number one seed in the AFC.
From your 5 AFC takeaways to the top 5 storylines out of the NFC in Week 14 next, plus at 12:45, that college coach the Skins could be courting. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. After a week of eating really clean and really well like a champion, this weekend got away from me a little bit. All it takes is just a bad Saturday, and I turn that into a bad Sunday. I'm like, oh, we'll just take the weekend off. We'll get back after it on Monday.
And thou hast backslided or backslid.
5 days on, 2 days off. When 2 days are really, really off.
It undoes more than 5 days.
It feels like, oh, it's still a net plus. Mm-mm. No, it's more of like a net minus.
Your net rate, your plus minus is not good.
Because the 5 days on are just, they're good, but they're like just a little bit helpful. Those two bad days are really, really, really unhelpful. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Sitting around watching football all day Saturday, all day Sunday. At least I took a combined 4,000 steps those 2 days. Combined 4,000 steps.
Oh.
I mean, that's an estimate. I don't know the actual number. There wasn't a lot of getting off the couch.
Not a lot of movement.
Let's get to our takeaways from the NFC. Remember Chris Russell on the show at 1 o'clock today to sort out when we're going to cut his hair and shave his head. On Grant and Danny, it's going to happen this week. Could it be tomorrow? Might it be Wednesday? Well, we have to wait to Thursday. Apparently, for some reason, we have to work around his schedule, I'm being told.
I understand that. He's a very busy man.
So we will chat with him coming up in 25 minutes. First takeaway in the NFC, we'll start with the night game. Do not count the Rams out just yet. Jared Goff is back playing okay football. This offense has come to life. Last night, he found Cooper Kupp on NBC.
3rd and 4. Gurley comes back into the backfield. Fires, and that will be caught. Cooper Kupp in the end zone. Touchdown.
You didn't think Sean McVay were going to let his boys go quietly into the night, did you? After they got destroyed by the Ravens by 39 points, absolutely embarrassed on Monday Night Football, they've bounced back with 34-7 and 28-12 wins, including one over a good Seahawks team. Back in the playoff chase, 8-5, one game back of Minnesota for the second wild card.
Defensively, that's the big difference. Their defense has given them chances. Remember how terrible they were early in this season? Remember how embarrassing that group was despite all the talent, all the high-priced free agents? They went and got cornerbacks, traded away all their first-round picks for defensive help, and it was awful. All of a sudden, that group is getting right and playing much better defense. It makes the offense that much better.
The Vikings beat the Lions 20-7, takeaway number two in the NFC. Not really sure if Minnesota is a legitimate championship contender, but damn if they don't handle bad teams at home. This is what they do to them. They beat Detroit by 13 in a game that wasn't even that close. This was like Packers-Redskins-esque, if you look at the yardage and things like that. They took their foot off the gas pedal at halftime, essentially. Kirk Cousins, I'm not sure that he threw the ball more than 5 or 6 times in the second half. He went for 240 and a touch, didn't turn the ball over. Dalvin Cook, just 62 yards on 18 attempts, scored this touchdown on Fox.
Deep in Minnesota territory. And a sack, missed the field goal. Now Cook sniffing the end zone. He got there.
Minnesota is 9-4. They are breathing on the necks of the Green Bay Packers, 10-3. Vikings only play one team with a winning record remaining because they've got the Bears again and they've got the Chargers this weekend. Now, I'm not saying that's an easy schedule because both of those teams are competitive. What I am telling you is they win those two games, they're playing a division championship game perhaps with the Packers in 2 weeks.
That week 17 all of a sudden is shaping up to be pretty cool, right? You got that Seattle-San Francisco matchup, and then you got a matchup for the NFC North too, potentially.
Could be fun. You got to handle your business, and you need to continue to play well defensively, which has been an issue for them. John Clayton wrote a story on all the – basically, the problems that each team has that's a contender. There are 9 contenders. He had the Vikings listed as one when he did that. Next up in our NFC takeaways, let's talk about the San Francisco 49ers and the New Orleans Saints. That game could be an NFC championship matchup. If you watched any of this game, you saw Jimmy Garoppolo and George Kittle throughout the day hooking up. And the play at the end of this game, I jokingly said it was Kittle's Heisman moment on Fox yesterday. Was absolutely awesome. Kittle running over defenders, getting a face mask as he set the Niners up to win the game.
Garoppolo fires. It is caught. Still on his feet is Kittle with a big play and the stiff arm. George Kittle, flags fly. He's down to the 30. What a run by George Kittle. Taking on everybody, but the penalty is huge. There are multiple flags. It would be a 39-yarder. On 4th and 2.
He legit dragged the defensive back like 18 yards while they were pulling on his face mask.
That's a man.
Like lifting the guy up off the ground as he was holding onto his face mask. So you could take either of these takeaways. That football game, exceptional. We could see it again. Or George Kittle, best tight end in the league, whichever
little
you want.
Little column A, little column B. Look at this. Look at what San Francisco has done. Now, there's an Arizona Cardinals mixed in here. Seahawks, overtime loss without Kittle, without Emmanuel Sanders. At the Packers, throttled them. Best, maybe the second best game of the year. At the Ravens, cross country for a West Coast team, playing a 1 o'clock start. Great game with the Ravens, lost at the wire on a field goal. Go across country again and beat New Orleans 48-46. They got the Falcons coming up, who's not any good, but the Rams playing great football all of a sudden, and then the Seahawks at Seattle to close out the season. What a juggernaut of a schedule, by the way. Just down the stretch for this team. Second half. First half of the year, they didn't beat anybody because they didn't play anybody. Not their fault. Well, I guess the win over the Rams was their sort of flagship win there in week number 6. But they're playing the Redskins, the Browns, the Bengals, the Bucks, the Panthers, Cardinals. Who cares? This second half of the season, and for them to end up finishing 13-3 or 14-2, as they're on pace to do, incredible. San Francisco's the best team in the NFC, and they just proved it with this past weekend.
Let's move on to the Packers. Takeaway number 4 in the conference. Green Bay. Different than they've been in the past, but every bit is good. They run the ball. They play defense. It's not a lot of heroic Aaron Rodgers stuff. He makes a throw or two when he has to. He made an outrageous throw between two defenders.
To Jones, that one?
Yeah. Third and 14 from his own goal line in the fourth quarter yesterday. So he's got it in the bag when he needs it. This is defense and running game. It's ugly. And Matt LaFleur does not want to say he's sorry for winning the way they are.
But the disappointments, is that going to override the fact that you won a game?
No, never. No, we'll never, like I said, we'll never apologize for winning. We're always going to feel great about winning. But you always want to go out there and put your best performance out there. And, you know, I think there was more out there today for us.
Grab Aaron Rodgers also, Thump, because he was talking about something similarly. He's had so many huge games and losses in his career.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been a part of aesthetically pleasing offenses that had bad defense where he's lost a bunch of shootouts. So you know that even though he might not go to bed feeling like he's having his best season, he doesn't feel bad about this either.
Well, I mean, I think we're finding different ways to win. It might be ugly at times to maybe some folks, but, you know, we ran the ball today for 180 yards or so and got Aaron Jones going. So, you know, different teams have thrown different things at us. And, you know, I just think we need to just be a little more consistent at times. You know, I don't think we had maybe the same type of flow after the first couple early drives with just the energy. And, you know, we just missed on a couple things. So we got to, you know, clean some of those stuff up. But I wouldn't mind winning ugly all the way to the Super Bowl.
Shout out to the court stenographer in there getting every single letter in every single word that Aaron Jones said. I mean, that Aaron Rodgers said, I cannot hear it. It's just too much. But Rodgers, he said this a couple weeks ago, I like not getting hit. It's a lot of fun. They still have the Aaron Rodgers hero game in the bag. They haven't needed it
maybe,
because they're playing good defense and handing the ball off. He could go, he can give Devontae Adams 20 targets. He could throw to Lazard. He could make Jimmy Graham work. I think they can still do that. They're better than they showed.
Last NFC takeaway is that the West is not wrapped up yet. Everyone was all over the Seahawks, said that you don't want to go to Seattle in the playoffs. Well, you may not have to. San Francisco moved past them yesterday. Those are 10 of the things that we learned and took out of yesterday's action around the NFL in both the AFC and NFC over the last couple of segments. Next, Skins linked to a college coach who teams have wanted for years. Could he actually be coming to the nation's capital? Walmart is apologizing for selling sweaters that show Santa Claus with lines of cocaine in front of him and the phrase, let it snow. I think they just looked at the sweatshirts and saw let it snow with a little snowman.
Because like a funny gag type
right.
Deal, yeah.
So look at the shirt, and then you just see these three little lines right in front of them. That's one of those things I would 100% not catch that. I feel like how many different people have to look at something before Walmart puts it on their shelves? Like, it's got to be caught at some point.
Somebody
right?
probably notices. That's not really on brand for us.
If you hire me, I'm not going to catch that or notice it. I'm going to say, oh, that's a good shirt. Yeah, maybe people will buy that. Or they're apologizing for that. Grant and Danny welcoming you back, 106.7 The Fan. Here was your big story of the weekend on the Redskins coaching front. Via Jason Lockanfora, our radio.com sports NFL insider who's on the show regularly. Dar, if you don't mind, I would love to talk to Locka this week about this at some point. Would be pretty cool. So here was his report yesterday. The Redskins are closing in on making Stanford coach David Shaw one of their top sought-after coaching candidates in their search. They're interested in him for their vacancy. He's talking to sources within the Redskins building. Look, if David Shaw actually decided he'd make the jump from Stanford, where he has long been respected and a lot of teams have wanted him to come to the league, I think there'd be several teams that want him, which then all of a sudden you've got to ask.
Bidding war there, yeah.
Could the Redskins actually get him? And maybe if they paid the most money or gave him the most years or something, they could. But here's something I didn't necessarily know. Lockenfora points out that Allen and Shaw both have ties to the Raiders, and that Shaw is apparently a guy that Allen has long been a proponent of. So if, in fact, they were to get in on him, Bruce Allen might still be there to do it.
So from 98 to 2001, Shaw was on the staff, a young coach at that point. So that, what was that, like 17, 18 years ago?
They knew each other then.
An up-and-comer, certainly.
But most people around the league are telling Lockenfora he thinks Snyder's going to have a hard time luring in a coach of that caliber. You and I have talked about that quite a bit. He's going to have to overpay, obviously. They want to hit a home run. Their first name that was linked to the Redskins, their pipe dream, so to speak, was to trade for Mike Tomlin. It seems like with him having a coach of the year season after being marred in some turmoil in Pittsburgh, it'll take way too much to trade for him. I've never for one second thought that was plausible. Right away, I talked to people within the organization, and they referred to it as fantasy football stuff. Mm-hmm. Just not something that was going to happen.
Shaw specifically, your thoughts on him?
I would love him.
I love David Shaw.
I think he's a great coach. He's got longtime NFL credentials as well. He was a wide receivers coach for the Ravens in 05. He was the quarterbacks coach there from 02 and 04. He was in Oakland as a quality control 98 to 2000, and then as the QB's coach in 2001. He worked with the Eagles before the Raiders. But he's been in Stanford now as the head coach from 2011 on, 86 and 34 in college, 8 bowl games, 3 Pac-12 championships, 5 Pac-12 North Division titles. He's won the Bobby Dodd Coach of the Year Award in 2017, Coach of the Year in his conference 4 times. Big David Shaw fan. I just don't think the Redskins would be able to land him because I think as soon as he said, I'm going to the NFL.
Someone else is getting in line.
Short of him being like good friends with Bruce Allen and me not knowing it, where they text all the time and go to each other's Christmas parties or something like that. Why on earth would you pick them?
See, the thing that I look for when a college coach is making the jump to the pros is the Nick Sabans of the world. You've got more talent than everybody. Nick Saban is a world-class recruiter, right? Nick Saban or Steve Spurrier back in the day at Florida. When you got more talent than everybody and you beat everybody's brains in every year, that's awesome. That makes you a great college coach. Can you figure out a way to compete with people that are more talented than you? And Stanford does that. David Shaw does that, has done that in spades. That's why, and again, I would miss on guys like this. That's why I loved what Chip Kelly might have brought to the NFL. Now, he bombed out for a million reasons. We know the history there. But the fact that he took Oregon from seventh best in the Pac-10 to kind of perennial championship contender had me going, you found a way to beat USC when they got 15 first-round draft picks. That's impressive to me. Shaw's the same way. Churning out guys like David DeCastro and Bryce Love on an annual basis, running pro-style stuff. Finding a way to compete when everybody's bigger, stronger, faster than you. That's always been really impressive to me. That is as impressive a college coach, to me, as translatable, if that's even a word. I feel like it's not, and I just kind of went with it, into what might happen in the pros, where you've got to find a way to compete with teams that are better than you right now this minute.
Well, I also think pro style intrigues me. In the same way, from a quarterbacking standpoint, I think there's a lot less guesswork about the transition.
Yeah.
Does it work or doesn't it in the NFL? Well, we know. He's an NFL mind who's gone to college and kind of taken his NFL stuff with him. It would work, I think, in the NFL. He's a culture builder. Mm-hmm. Seems like players buy into what he sells. I really, really like him. By the way, former guest of the Grant and Danny radio program.
That's right.
Unrelated, but very random. When did we have him on?
So we had him on.
Was it after Trent Murphy got drafted?
Yeah, it was after Trent Murphy, and it was not too far removed from the entire bullying saga with Incognito. I'm blanking on the guy's name. In Florida.
Jonathan Martin.
Jonathan Martin, yeah. And so I asked him a question about that. You know, and AJ at the time, Bruce is like, don't ask him about it. I'm like, dude, I got to ask him about it. He'll handle it great. And the idea that, well, he went to Stanford, therefore he's soft, because like because the way Stanford plays is really soft. Have you seen them play at all, how physical and awesome they are? He gave a great answer to that question. He's awesome.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be the guy here. But what I would say is people should not just dismiss every candidate that is good as if, well, the Redskins have no chance. Money talks. They've always gotten good coaching candidates. Aside from Jim Zorn, that did happen.
I was going to say that, except
but
for that time.
Jay Gruden was well sought after, would have been hired by two other teams, if not the Redskins. Mike Shanahan had won 2 Super Bowls. You know, Joe Gibbs came out of retirement. The money, the term, Dan Snyder shines in those meetings. Everyone sits down with him and leaves liking him more than they do. Oh, he's just misunderstood, or oh, the media got this guy wrong. So don't rule out the idea that they could go get a quality coach.
Yeah, months after Marty Schottenheimer said, I'll never work for that guy. He worked for that guy.
But I have to say this, that you know they're already starting this search. You're hearing these leaked things like, oh, they're trying to talk to David Shaw or Matt Rhule supposedly turned them down or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Someone's making those calls. Who is it? Is it Bruce Allen?
Is it
running
Bruce?
The search? Doesn't that make it more likely that he is your team president? Is it Eric Schaefer? One person
who's
did
doing
tell
it?
Me. He's like, I'm trying to figure it out. I was told it was not Bruce or Eric Schaefer. Okay. Then
Doug
is
Williams?
It an independent third party?
Is it a consulting firm?
That's what I'm saying. Is it someone completely out of the building? I don't know. But again, this person who's not in the Redskins organization said they talked to someone who told them it was not Eric Schaefer or Bruce Allen who reached out to take the temperature of a coaching candidate through an agent. Well, who would that be? I don't know. Chris Russell joins us next. We're going to cut his hair and shave his head this week. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've got to iron out the details with him when he joins us top of the hour in 4 minutes.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.